right. Good evening, everybody. Good evening to our parents and to our grade 9 learners who are here and online. And a very good evening and warm welcome to our guest. Thank you for being here tonight and sharing your expertise with our parents and students and to the people who are going to be online and listening in as well. This is it's one of the milestones for parents and students in their academic journey. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the first moments where they start to have the wobbles in the stomach where they're going, are we making the right choice or not? Because this could have long-term implications. So again, thank you for sharing your expertise. It's very valuable to us.
Thank you.
So to introduce you all, I don't think I need to make too much introduction to the first two people, I hope. Boss man, Mr. Aitchison, headmaster. He's going to speak a little bit about the general information behind subject choices and how they lead into career choices. The same from Ms. Pretoria. She's going to give us a little bit more info, especially as it relates to your public universities. So your WITs, your TIKIs, Stellenbosch, UCT, universities like that. And then we're going to hear from Dr. Annie van Us. Dr. van Us is the academic lead in the Faculty of Education at Emeris Online Center. She has a PhD in education, specializing in special needs. She brings a wealth of experience from her early career as a foundation phase teacher. You're a very brave lady doing that age group, to her current role in shaping inclusive, innovating teacher education. Her work focuses on integrating digital tools, coding and robotics and 21st century skills into early learning with a strong commitment to community engagement and educational transformation. That is very purposeful work. And we hear about 21st century education nonstop in this industry. That's what the whole goal and aim and objective is. So we really are looking forward to hearing what you have to say. So without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to this guy. He's immediately on my left so that if he speaks too much, I can give him a kick and move things along.
I feel that both of you are on my case about speaking too much. I've been given strict instructions. I think that while this feels like a very heavy, important evening and a decision point, there's a couple of decisions on the important side that are made for you already and some that you get to have a choice about. And what I mean by that is you have to take life orientation. You have to take English. You have to take a first additional language at EduInc. It can be isiZulu or Afrikaans at this point. You have to take a math subject, mathematics or math literacy. So there's more than half of your subject choices already made for you because the Department of Education as well as universities recognize that those are important skills. If you matriculate with good English marks and good maths marks, you can pretty much study anything you need to study. Why we throw life orientation is in, and I'll let Mr. Kotabaria talk about that, why it's an important subject as well and how it relates to the other subjects, is that it is an important subject. It's not a wasteful subject, even though it might not be allocated AP points. There's a lot of skills that other subjects benefit from because of life orientation. And obviously, your first additional language is not just a pain in the butt. It is an important part of your brain development. The way we acquire a first additional language is very different to the way we acquire our first language, our home language. And those skills, it's be it through Afrikaans or isiZulu in this case, can be applied to other subjects, other languages. If you want to pick up Spanish or Mandarin or one of the other Jamaic languages after school, it's a lot easier because your brain has already burnt those neural pathways to do that. So what we end up talking about is a choice of three subjects. What are the other three subjects going to be? And what would be an interesting thing as an exercise to do right now is to ask the audience here to put up their hands and tell me how many of you are practicing what you actually studied for when you started. And I'm going to include the panel. How many of us are actually doing what we studied at university? One,
the teachers.
Two, some of the teachers. So just as a comparison, how many of us are not doing what we studied at university? And that's more than put up their hands in the first place. And what I want to use that as an illustration of is that it's not what you study that's important. It is the fact that you have studied that is important. And yes, there are certain things. You want to know that your doctors have studied to be doctors. And you want to know that your engineers have studied to be engineers. But there are a lot of professions out there where a general degree gives you access to the specializations that you need. A lot of us studied general undergrad degrees that allowed us to do a PGCE and then has allowed us to go on and do other higher degrees and certificates, master's degrees and things like that, that are specific to what we are busy doing right now. What that means is, I'm hoping it takes some of the pressure off you, that the decisions now about your subject choice is not about what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. What you're going to do for the rest of your life is be a human being that needs to be able to maintain relationships, that can do a job if asked to do so, can work collaboratively with people, can use technology and AI to facilitate your work output and productivity. And more importantly, be a decent human being, someone who's going to study for the rest of their lives. And that's what those decisions are going to be. And as we hear from the rest of the panel, what the subject choices you're going to make now are going to give you access to the next step if your next step is tertiary education. What subjects are going to do that? It's about the subjects that you're good at. It's the subjects that you are passionate about. Because it's going to get hard, it is going to be difficult. The should do subjects are the first ones that get dropped and changed. And those should do subjects are the ones that end up taking more time than is necessary. They get allocated, one subject gets allocated 50% of the time for studying, and it becomes a big issue. You need to actually have subjects that are allocated appropriately, that you do well in, because at the end of the day, unless you want to be an engineer, be a doctor, some of the specific subjects are not that important. Okay. And as we go through the rest of this evening, we'll talk about the do's and the don'ts, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, and some of the dynamics around your subject choices and changing, etc., etc. One of the big things that I am going to discuss is mathematics versus math literacy. I'm going to talk about the subject combinations that work well together generally, and subjects that do play to certain strengths. What are more language subjects? What are study intensive subjects? And what you're going to hear from the teachers is the value that their specific subjects bring to your learning, not from a knowledge and a content perspective, but from a skills development. So when we are looking at your careers now, we're not looking at knowledge. Knowledge is replaced and accessible by AI, by technology. We're looking at the skills that you are bringing into that space and what those subjects are going to allow you to do and how they are going to enable you to be more functional as an adult studying and in the workplace. Okay. There will be an opportunity for questions, and I think that's where a lot of the individual things get put into place. This is being recorded so that if you miss stuff, you can go back and watch it or listen to it, and you can share it and get opinions about it. But the bottom line is there are going to be some things that you have to do if you like to do them or not. That's a life lesson. There are going to be other subjects that you get to choose that you're good at. That's going to be the nice to haves. And as long as they reach your objective of giving you the AP scores you need and get you to the next step, foot in the door, then that's good enough. Because it does get hard. You guys are getting going into the FET. It is further education and training, and it is an academic path. Okay.
So before we continue, this panel tonight will be slightly different. We don't want to just dump a whole lot of information on you, because I'm quite sure you're going to have questions as we go. So after each speaker, I'm going to just pause to see if you do have any questions. Feel free to ask them at this point before it falls out of your mind. And then we'll move on to the next one, and we'll finish off with the teachers available to, if you really want to get specific about certain subjects, you can do that too. Okay. So any questions at this point? Grade nine's online. That includes you.
There's somebody trying to get online. Who's managing the meeting?
There's somebody trying to join that we let in.
Yeah, because they belong to EduInc.
Could you maybe just put the keyboard and the mouse with you?
Okay.
Let them in.
It's JP. Was it from your account?
From Mr. Singh's account.
Is it?
Yeah.
Kirti? Ishan set up the meeting. Okay, we'll sort that out right now.
Just on a final note, before we get into the specifics of the subjects and where we're going with that, next year, at the beginning of next year, when your children move into the FET phase, at that parent meeting, we'll discuss what the implication of the FET phase is and what that actually means. This one's about the subjects that you're going to take into, or that your children are going to take into that phase. Next year, we'll go into the nitty-gritties of the fact that the end of grade 9 is actually the end of basic education, and that FET is your first NQF levels. We'll worry about that at that point and the implications and what that means in January when we come back and do those meetings. This one is just for the decision point that you are at now. Okay. Ms. Pretorius, over to you.
Hello, everyone. Give me 1 second. I need to pick up my laptop. Right. Okay. So as Mr. A said, this is just to give you an idea with the subjects and the choice that you and your child are going to sit down and make. So what I'm going to do is just give you a bit more insight in how to, on how public universities operate and how APS scores work. And if you choose certain subjects, what could be your future career paths. But as already mentioned, it's not like if you studied a BA this, you have to go into BA something, or you did accounting, you have to go be an accountant. Yeah, there are many different paths in life you can end up taking. Right. So, firstly, some outcomes. I'm going to sound like a teacher now. But yeah, just understanding our subject choice. Mr. I already touched on that, so I'm not going to continue too long on about that. The second thing is looking at subject choices in grade 10 to 12, right? What subjects can you take together? You know, if you want to take further studies math, you have to take core math, for example. And then the last thing is just APS, understanding what APS score is and how it functions. Just a bit of an overview. So if at any point you're like, this is like information overload, just maybe make a note if you want to ask something afterwards. And if you have like a subject specific question, then yeah, make a note to ask the teacher afterwards, because they can give you like very good insight into that specific field or topic. Yeah. Okay. Right. So as Mr. already mentioned, there's a few subjects that you will have to take up until grade 12. So English home language, right? Afrikaans first additional or isiZulu, right? You can choose one. It's not to say that if you did Afrikaans up until grade 9, you have to do it for 10 to 12. It is your choice, but yeah, keep in mind, that's a whole different language now. Right. Then you need to choose between core mathematics and mathematical literacy. So for this, Ms. Snow and Ms. Mbulu can give you a bit more insight into that. I'm going to briefly touch on it. But yeah. In terms of which math to choose, it doesn't have to be, you have to do math core if you are struggling at it on an extreme level. You could choose math literacy, and there's still a lot of career paths. It's definitely not a be all and end all if you pick the one or the other. Okay. Right. And then life orientation. Okay. It's the last one on my list because it's the most important. Okay. You have to take it. You have to be a good human. Yeah. Orientate yourself to how life works. Right. And then, okay, then electives at our school, right? You have to choose three. So we have physical science and life science, right? And then we have economics and business studies, right? The kids love those two. And then we have geography and history, okay? The underrated but also very good subjects. Anyway, so these subjects fall into three bands, if I had to make it an overview. They fall into like three broad bands. So your sciences would fall into degree where you do sciences, obviously. So Bachelor of Science, that type of thing. Then economics and business studies, a lot of commerce degrees require them, right? And then lastly, for geography and history, they are considered broadly to be humanities subjects. But for example, someone doing law, you will still have to choose electives in your first year, for example. A lot of people end up choosing history because you have to have some language, extra language elective that you do that like basically just shows you have that skill and comprehension and understanding. Because yeah, anyway, not going to get into that. We're not yet at picking your whole career. Right. And then we have two eighth subjects that you can take. Further studies math. Right. And as I mentioned, you need math core for it. And then we have further studies English. Right. Ooh, right. Okay. Yes. So, I'm not going to read this entire table start to finish, just to give you a general idea, right? If we look at certain fields, you can already kind of see in which subject direction you should be going, right? And then I just also added a few notes for each one. As I said, I'll touch on a few of them. The PowerPoint will be shared. So in your own time, if you want to scroll through it on your phone or you want to double check something, you can. Right. I think a lot of parents, I don't know about the people in the room, but a lot of parents do generally want their kids to do things like law and become a doctor. And, you know, you want your kid to be set up for life, like in a career that you know is safe, right? That's just my opinion on that. But anyway, so if you look at something like your medicine or your engineering, you do need to take your math core, your physical sciences, your life sciences. It doesn't necessarily mean that if you want to be in the medical field, there's only those three subjects and you can only become a doctor. There's so many different like bands of medicine that you can go into. There's Bachelor of Science degrees that also give you access to medicine that, you know, it doesn't have to just be straight, I'm a doctor or there's nothing else, right? Yeah, same thing with engineering, commerce, law. They all have like so many different niches to them. So that's going to lead on to my next point. The best thing is when you've decided, okay, maybe I want to do something in commerce. So that's like business management, entrepreneurship, that type of thing. To go to the university that you're interested's website, right? Or the private college or the international university, and then go and have a look what their requirements are. You know, subjects, APS scores, all the little nitty-gritties. Because that will give you a better idea, right? Just because, as I mentioned here, this is general. You could look at one career and they have four or five requirements, but then another field has one. They just want to see that your English mark is good. Okay. Right. So then, right. Some considerations. Again, I'm not going to read this word for word, but things that the kids need to consider firstly, right? What are your strengths? Firstly, what subjects do you enjoy doing, right? And this is a bit of a trick question because you can't say nothing. I don't enjoy any of them. Okay, right. there has to be something that you enjoy in a specific subject or an aspect that you would like to learn more about, and the likelihood that one of the subjects explores it at a deeper level is, it's quite possible. It's big. Right. Then what are your strongest subjects? So then we do look a bit at marks. Okay, right. It doesn't have to be that it's, okay, I must have 70s or 80s for me to consider this to be a good subject. If you are achieving 60s or you're getting a relatively good mark for it, then that's perfect. It's still considered a strong subject. Okay. Obviously, if you're failing it, then, you know, we need to have a bit of a conversation there, right? If it is actually a strong subject, right? And the last thing is hobbies and talents, right? Related to your subject choices, right? So, a random example, but one of my geography kids, Miles, he loves his scouts and he loves going on hikes and all of that type of thing. So geography makes sense for him. He's also like very analytical. He's very interested in nature. So that's a field that fits well with his passions and interests. Right. That's also things you have to consider. Do you like understanding how a game is programmed? How does the programming underneath it work? Or when you look at a game, you look at how it's designed. Okay. Just another example that I think is a bit more relevant to this generation of kids. Right. Yeah. And then moving on with academic performance in terms of choosing math core and math lit. Again, the teachers can provide a bit more light on that and Ms. Day as well. There is a bit of a point system that they allocate to decide which one that you should take. Yeah. And then with your science subjects, it is a lot of content. It's a lot of work. It's hard to understand. I mean, everyone at this point, you have physical science, you have life sciences, right? You've already experienced a bit of what is involved in the subject. All right, moving on. Then, right, I've already mentioned, consider your career interests. Go look at the university's website to see exactly what their requirements are for the program. But the last two are very important. If you're not sure what you want to do, keep your options open. Okay. Don't take subjects that will force you into a specific field, right? Okay. again, just general, I'm not saying you will have to end up in that field if you've now got economics and business and you realize, actually, I don't want to go into that field. All right. But yeah, try and keep your choices in such a way that you are able to say, okay, I could go into commerce, or maybe I could go do something in the sciences with what I've studied at school. Right. And then the last one is do job shadowing. That's quite an important one, I think, because you can look at a university program, or you can look at a diploma program, maybe if you're interested in that, and go, oh, this sounds so exciting. It sounds interesting. I'm going to learn all this interesting stuff. And then when you get there, you realize, actually, I have to sit in 6 hours of lectures a day. I hate this. Like, this is boring. There's a guy standing in front. He's mumbling, let me out. All right. I'm joking. It's not every university. It's just, I'm saying, like, an extreme experience. Right. But for job shadowing, it could mean if you want to be a veterinarian, go and shadow at a local practice. Meet with a local veterinarian. See what they do on a day-to-day. There are definitely, there's a lot of companies that are willing to take on kids to job shadow. And then you can actually like see what happens day to day in that field. Yeah, I think that's a very, very important one. And do it sooner rather than later. So even now, if you've picked specific subjects, right, and you have an idea of what field you want to go into, the January like month when there's still a bit of holiday, go approach a company, have some job shadowing and see what it's like. Yeah, do a week, few days, but definitely, yeah, like dedicate a bit of time to see what the field is actually like instead of, you know, just going in for an hour and sitting at the vet's office and you're watching everyone come in and out. That's also not going to have any real impact because you're not seeing what the vet's doing. You're not seeing all the little interactions in the day to day. All right, moving on. Now, with public universities, right, they firstly look for some specific key things, right? So for a bachelor's degree, you would need around 50% in four of your subjects, right? Okay. That's for the bachelor's degree pass to say you can go study towards a bachelor's degree at a university, right? Then the next one, a diploma pass, you need 40% in four of your subjects. And for the higher certificate pass, you need 40% in at least two of your subjects. Yeah, afterwards, you're welcome to ask the difference. You know, from the teachers, certificates and diplomas and degrees, they all have a certain like weight to them, but yeah, they're leveraged in different ways and you can definitely like ask and we can give more detail on that. Anyway, and then the last one is, TVET colleges, right? So with this is more practical skills, fitters and turners, plumbers, they are less worried about your academic outcomes. It's more about practical skills. If someone shows you how to do something, can you then do it, right? So a lot of people who don't necessarily study engineering but go on to become mechanics, they might end up at a TVET college, right? Okay, and then, okay, a bit of a heavy one. I'm going to try and get through this fairly quickly and keep it brief. So with APS scores, right, this is what the universities use as their second, I would say, requirement to see if you qualify for a program. So remember now we had the, you got a bachelor's pass on your matric certificate, right? That would be the first thing if you want to do a degree at varsity, right? Then they start looking at APS scores. So firstly, what that abbreviation or acronym means admission point score, right? And it's a standardized system that a lot of public universities in South Africa use to determine if you have the ability to do the program, right? And with this, it gets very specific. For some programs, the APS score is lower. For others, they require an extremely high APS score and they have extra requirements on your subjects. And yeah, it gets very conscriptive. That's the word. Like, yeah, exactly what they want from you. Right. So how it works for each of your subjects, right? You are awarded a score from 1 to 7 for it. Okay. APS scores take your 6 best subjects, excluding LO, right? And from that, your APS score is calculated. So for most programs, the max score that they use would be a 42. That's if you got, like, you got 7 points for every subject, right? I'll show you guys in a second briefly what that looks like. How do you know? Do you get 1 point, 2 points, that type of thing from the APS system? So moving on, if that's the highest you can get for the APS score, the bands work as follow. So you would get 1 point if your mark is between 0 to 29%, like your average for that subject. And then it goes up in the levels from there, right? And then your last one being 80 to 100%, you get a 7, right? So again, just an example, if you get like a 7, a 6, another 6, 2 5s and a 4, your APS would be around 33, right? So how to use this, you could already potentially, if you know you want to go into a certain field, I'm not saying career, I'm saying field, because in a field or faculty, there's so many different degrees you can do. Yeah, if you open university website, you'll also see this. So many things there. So let's say now you get 33 and you open a university website and you're having a look, you're seeing, okay, what can I qualify for? You need to consult that specific faculty or department's programs and then see what their entry requirements are. Because as I said, again, like one faculty might say, okay, we just want an APS score of 35. Another might say, okay, we want an APS score of 38 and you must also have math, physical science and the following, right? Right. And then there's also online APS calculators. So you don't have to do it all yourself. You can literally just type in your marks and, the website will do it for you. Most universities also have one that you can make use of. Okay. Right.
Can I say something about AP scores quickly?
Yeah.
Just remember that if they say the AP score is 33, that is their minimum requirements. If people are applying with an APS of 42 or 40 or 38, and the minimum requirement is 33, and they fill up with the higher level candidates, they will fill the course with the higher level candidates. So an APS score is the minimum. Don't aim for the minimum, aim for above, because you have a better chance of getting in if that's the case. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Young. It's very useful to use. Just an example here, right? If we look at the Faculty of Law at the University of Pretoria, give me 1 second. I just switched the window. Right. So clicking now on that link, I've gone and I've looked. I want to do an LLB, for example. When you go onto the webpage, already you can see there, they tell you what their minimum requirements are, right? There's the APS score. They want English home language or English first additional language. And then they also tell you what level your average needs to be at. So that's for all your subjects together. What was your average achievement? I'm not going to read everything off of here, but you can see it lays out in pretty great detail what they expect of you and what you would need to get into the program. Yeah, right. But then now, I just want to show you guys another university's entrance admissions for a dentist, for example, right? 1 second. Okay. So here, we just scroll down a bit through all the program things. You'll see that their entrance requirements are a bit different. So they are looking specifically for, did you achieve a level 5 at least for your English home language or your English first additional? Then did you achieve a level 5 for maths or higher? And then lastly, they want to see life sciences and physical sciences at a level 5 or higher, right? And then again with this, they specify additional requirements that they expect, right? And yeah, most programs, they will tell you exactly what they want or expect. But again, this is just to give you guys like insight into exactly how the universities look at it. And then yeah, for this one, for example, it's got another extra requirement. It's got something called an NBT test. I'm not going to go into much to that, but yeah, it's just another type of testing that the varsity will use to screen candidates and see if you are the correct fit for the program. Right. So then going back to my PowerPoint.
For the matrix, I usually gather quite a lot of resources relevant to all of this. So if your kids at this stage are already looking at university stuff, you know, the requirements and all of that, please feel free to contact me. I can send through the relevant prospecti and stuff like that so that you can be as up to date as you need to be to know what direction to move into.
Right. Okay. And then if you have no idea what you really want to do with your future, I would say start with job shadowing, look at your, you know, your interests and your strengths. But just as a general overview, this is not at all like the be all and end all. doesn't mean you take these subjects, you are going to do these fields. But for example, let's say you want to do something in science and engineering, you could take math and physical science and life science. Let's say you want to do commerce. Okay. So you want to study an entrepreneurship degree. You want to do management. Maybe you want to run a corporation. Then you could look at taking something like mathematics and business studies and economics, right? And then let's say you're going into humanities or education. Then they're looking at your languages. You can take history or geography. And they do also consider your life orientation, although it's not part of the APS score. Okay. But that would help you in that field. Right. And then, yeah, for health sciences, I think that's a pretty straightforward one to guess. They want life science, they want physical science, and they want core mathematics there. Right. And then this is my last slide. Sorry, guys. I'm skipping ahead here before I start boring everyone. So, these are just some tips. Again, you can look over these. I'm sure if you speak to anyone that is qualified to talk on the matter, they can also like tell you a million different things. Yeah, definitely ask the information that's relevant to you. But yeah, the first thing, talk to the subject teacher. They'll tell you about the different fields, as I said, what options are available and what your kid can do with the subjects that they pick. Secondly, if you really want to go that course and your kid's very indecisive, you could always look at doing an aptitude test or one of those tests that show your kid's interest with a registered professional. Yeah, that's very important. Go to someone that knows what they're talking about and has the right qualifications. And then, yeah, that can also give you a better idea for your, like, child. What are their skills? What subjects are they good at? Because they test everything. They test your mathematical abilities. They test comprehension, reasoning, all that stuff. Right. Yeah. And then I would say again, just check the program that you're wanting to apply to, the specific career. Check on the university site. Because yeah, with the public universities, that APS score, it's mostly the same, right, at all universities. But then again, different programs, different faculties will have different requirements or specifics. But yeah, that's basically it.
Can I add one thing to that? Guys, choosing a degree is not like choosing a car where you get it for status. Mm. It's about functionality, okay? Because at the end of the day, I suppose it's best illustrated like this. Jax and I are in the habit of hiring very well qualified people and very intelligent people, and we're busy doing training one day. And one of these brainy maths people put up his hand and said to me, he's doing his master's in applied mathematics. And he says to me, Gersh, what's the difference between a BA degree and a Debonair's pizza? I said, I have no idea. And he said, a Debonair's pizza can feed a family of four. And I said to him, well, just remember that it's a BA degree that's paying your salary. And that shut him up very quickly. So the point is, it's not about, I've got these letters behind my name. It's not like what car I drive. It's, can I do the job that I need to do and earn money and put, you know, and contribute to society? So don't choose degrees on status and ego, because it's the fastest way to misery and not actually succeeding in that space. Okay. Everyone, don't become teachers. If you want an international passport around the world, become a teacher, especially from a country like South Africa. You will get expedited visas for most countries in the world because teacher shortage around the world is real. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Petrus, and thank you for your insights, Mr. Aitchison. It sounds quite daunting the first time you hear a lot of what Ms. Petrus has just been saying. You think, wow, I didn't realize it is as complicated as this to go to the next step in education for myself or for my child. So I'm going to help you contextualize this in terms of how you go from step to step through this process. But I'm going to wait until after Dr. Van Assis, we've heard from her as well, because she's going to give us more of a private institution perspective. Ms. Pretorius's perspective, as I said, was your public institution perspective. So it tends to be in that more traditional space. You must do this and then you must do this and you must do this. The same space that's been done for the last 100 odd years. And then I will provide that context for you in terms of how you do this step by step. It makes it a little less daunting. over to you.
Thank you so much. I have to say you're a real teacher. She literally covered everything to the detail. But yeah, it's lovely being here this evening. It's really a privilege for me to be here. I have to be honest, I specialize in education, so I know everything about education. But if you're going to ask me a question about law, I won't know a thing. But just to share a little bit with you, so choosing subjects for grade 10 is actually very overwhelming. I mean, you're still so young and now you have to make big decisions and you don't really know, you know, where life will take you in and which direction you have to go in. So it's really overwhelming. But all I can say is trust your parents because they know you the best as well. Let them also guide and support you a little bit to know what you need to do. And then also you have amazing teachers and principals as well that can give you advice and guidance on what to do. So just to share with you, when I was in grade 9, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I wanted to actually become like a pop star. But if you know me, I can't sing. I haven't been selected to be in any choir. So my dad said, you know what, let's think of another direction for your life, because I don't think that's going to work out. And thankfully I believed him. I'm like, okay, maybe I need to do something else. So we started chatting and he said, what do you like to do? Or what are you passionate about? And I said, I love kids. Like, I love children and they make me feel so happy. And, you know, I will rather spend time with children than adults because they're so lovable. So my dad said, okay, why don't you go and study foundation phase? I said, okay, let me try and study foundation phase to become a teacher. So I started studying foundation phase, and my first year when I actually had to go to school to do my practicals, I hated it. I was like, oh my word, I started studying the wrong thing. I didn't choose the correct subjects. But my dad said, okay, just try. Try and go again and just get it through the first year. So I said, okay, let me just get through the first year. So after I actually made it through my first year, I started becoming passionate about education and children. And I couldn't stop studying. I did my honors in education, my master's, and now my PhD. And I actually wanted to thank my dad for, you know, guiding me and supporting me to actually make the right decision. So he knew me better than I actually knew myself at that stage. So with, I actually studied at the Northwest University, a public university, and we were so many students in the class, I think like 300. So I didn't pay that much attention always, but I got through my qualification. But what I wanted to say, if you know you're just going to become a number and you are struggling to focus in big groups, then a private higher education institution is also a good way and a good option, because with our company, we are called Varsity College. So we have about 30 to 50 students in a class, and we focus on equipping our students with the necessary skills and knowledge to be able to become teachers, but not just normal teachers, like teachers that can integrate robotics and coding and technology and really equip them with the skills that they need. So with a private higher education institution, I think the admission requirements are exactly the same as with the publics. We have specific requirements. So for example, if you want to go in education, there's language requirements that you need. So you need to pass your home language with 50% and then your first additional language with 40%. And you also need to take on an African language. So as I've mentioned, I specialize in education, so I know the admission requirements there. But all I can tell you now is ask questions. Do research now. Ask your parents for advice. Ask your teachers. Get all the knowledge that you can to actually make the right decision now. Because like I said, your parents know you better than you know yourself. They might inspire you to take a subject that will actually help you in the future. And yeah, take the time to make the specific decision. And if you make a wrong decision, it's not the end of the world. you know, there's always other opportunities where you can go into another direction as well, or do a bridging course to do the qualification that you want. So all the best with what you need to do and the decisions that you have to make. Good luck to the parents. My child is still young. I don't know how I'm going to be when he's actually grade 9 and also need to decide the subject. It's very overwhelming, but I know you're going to do the right thing because you have an amazing team to support you and parents to support you. So all the best with your journey.
Can I ask one question?
Well,
yes, may I?
Did I have a choice?
One of the questions that often happens, you spoke about the smaller classes for private institutions, universities, instances where students have had, you know, been diagnosed with dyslexia and need some accommodations with readers and scribes when doing assessment and that. Mm. The private universities seem a lot more open to accommodating that, so that it's not a barrier to them completing a tertiary education. Do you want to talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, so with special needs specifically now, so I used to work on the Sandton campus as a lecturer as well, and we actually had a variety of students who had special needs and needed additional support. And those students actually did amazing. They got extra additional time to complete assessments. We had specific tutors to assess the, you know, support them as well. The lecturers were also all trained to provide that one-on-one support, and also none of the students were aware of that. It was very confidential as well. And I think with the publics as well, there's a lot of support there for students with special needs. And at the end, you know, they receive the exact same qualification.
So it shouldn't be, I've got accommodations now. I'm, you know, I've got dyslexic tendencies, etc. So I'm not going to study tertiary. There are options that make it accessible for students to be able to do that.
Yes, a lot of support. I think it's just important to also trust your lecturers, and when you register, to explain your situation, and then from there you will receive all the support that you need.
Thank you very much for that. You hit on a couple of points there that I just feel also, I actually made notes on them to raise them, and then you spoke about them. And the first one is, I love hearing the stories. We always hear that story of our first day in varsity, and it's real. It seems to be a universal thing. I don't know if lecturers are trained to do this on day one, but we all have that story of sitting in the exam, in the lecture hall, and when your lecturer says, look to your left, look to your right, because there's only going to be one of you sitting here next year, right? I think we all had that. But these are the universities that the times have changed. You do have more option available to you now. You are not required to be in the 300 strong lecture room if you don't think that's going to work for you. You can have options of smaller, more intimate private universities, private tertiary education, that you don't have to deal with that, which is a really good thing, I think. It just, there are more options available than there ever were before. The second thing is, I'm so pleased you said, it doesn't matter if you make a mistake. Mm. And that's a great point to segue back into going back down to grade 9. We've been talking about what's going to happen matric and after matric. Let's go back down to grade 9. The first time, you don't have to get yourself into a complete knot about making a mistake is right now. If you make a subject choice going into grade 10 that doesn't work, we change it. We are not casting this decision in stone.
What? We can change it?
Yes, there are logistical issues. It's not simple, but it is doable. Okay, we do have the options, even with the IAB. Yes, we register the subject choices with the IAB straight away. But the IAB does give us certain leeway. We get dates. We get cutoff dates. Until this point, they can change a subject in grade 10. And until this point, it's quite early in the year in grade 11 for obvious reasons. You know, you don't need a child catching up 18 years worth of work and then getting ready for the months worth of work and then getting ready for matric. But this is not worth getting an ulcer over. Okay? Just like, unlike our varsity days, you know, when I did my first degree, it was marketing and I hated every second of it. From day one, I knew I was in the wrong degree. But my parents were old school, and it was like, you will finish this. You started it, you will finish it. 4 years of hell. Because
stats.
Still twitching. I need therapy. Because of that. EduInc is an academic school. So this is why you don't see on that subject, Rafa, you don't see tourism and you don't see hospitality. Those are your TVET. If you're going in the TVET direction into your skills-based learning, your hospitality industries, the hotel schools, that sort of thing, that's why we don't offer them. We offer the academic stream that is designed to take you into an academic tertiary space. Okay? The one thing we do differently, which is to your advantage, grade nines, is unlike most other schools, in fact, unlike every other high school that I know of, we don't stream the subjects. So most other high schools or all other high schools that I'm aware of will say you need to choose one from the social sciences band, one from the natural sciences band, one from this, one from that, one from the commerce band. You can't take history and geography, for example. And the reason for that, that most schools do that, is because timetabling becomes impossible. It really becomes, I mean, there are programs out there where you can timetable for a school, and that's what most schools use, that you have to have streams. Otherwise, your timetable doesn't work. Being small, we can be more agile. This is why children in the FET phase, the grade 10 to 12 phase, sometimes have lessons that go from 2:15 till 3:15, and they have a study period, not a free period. It's called a study period, not a free period, during the day. Because we don't stream the subjects like that. It makes our timetabling far more complex, and it's why we have to put that extra hour on, and sometimes you'll do a half hour at 7 till 7:30. It's to accommodate not forcing the streams. It means that our kids have the option. They can take two subjects in the same stream. They can do history and geography if they want to. They can do life science and physical science, or they can do economics and business. They can have those options available to them. Okay. So as I said, this is the segue into bringing it back down to the decision point you're having to make now. What you've been hearing about is where this is going, because it does start here. You can see how this path, then you're starting a path here. But to help you make the decision, and normally I would do this on the board. It's my teacher coming out of me. If you're struggling with this, sometimes it helps to do it backwards. So you sit together and you go, right, let's cast forward. Let's go to when you are a functional working adult, no longer draining my bank account. What does your life look like? What do you want it to look like? What would you like it to be? What are you earning? What's your lifestyle like? There's your ideal. Now we go back a step. What is the type of qualification I need to afford that lifestyle? Oh, okay, hang on. If I want the Maserati and the six-bedroom mansion and, okay, yeah, it's the actuary type level qualifications. That's probably not for me. So let's scale things down, and we have the conversation about being more realistic. So we go from the lifestyle I want to the qualification I need. What paperwork, what letters do I need to make that real? That then I go, right, so what university will take me into that qualification, will give me that? Because remember, universities and tertiary education is also quite, it also has trends. You know, for a long time, if you wanted to be a CA, you went to the University of Pietermaritzburg. For 10 or 12 years, that was the place to be. Mm. Even now, if you want to be an engineer, you know you want to go to UP. That's the place. You know, universities get reputations for being very, very good in certain faculties. It's what gives them their credibility from a global standpoint. It's how they rank them. So that's my qualification. Where's the best place I can go to get me that qualification? That's your next one down. And then your next one down is, and what subjects and at what level do I need to be operating to get acceptance into that. So what subjects do I need to be choosing now? So can you see how sometimes it narrows down your thinking? Instead of sitting going, I'm just going to start throwing darts into mist, and wherever the dart lands, that's the subject I'm going to choose, and I'm going to just figure it out from there. Flip it around. Go backwards, because it narrows everything into a funnel, and you go, ooh, that Maserati means I do need to get my maths right. And suddenly things get real. Then you can do the bucket of cold water, parents, if you want to. You can say, right, go and fetch your last report. Let's calculate your APS right now. Because if you want the Maserati, you've just worked out that you need to get in on an APS of 40 with these subjects at that level. Let's calculate your APS. And he goes, ooh, okay. Yeah, that maths was at 45. What was that score? And we add up our 6 highest marks on our report. Well, sorry for you, my friend. Your APS is sitting at 32. You're 13 points away from your Maserati, my friend. What are you going to do about that? And they're going, oh, actually getting my marks right now does have significance and consequence. And every time I don't study for my maths exam, I'm actually chipping away at my Maserati. Can you see how just changing the narrative, reframing the picture, helps you narrow down this decision? So right now, this is something that Mr. C would be doing in LO when he's doing the subject choices and everything else. Showing them how to practice doing their APS is a good exercise. They should be doing it already. They get them into the habit of calculating their APS on every report card they get, because it really quantifies how far away they are from the dream that they have. And you aren't the bad guy. How can you be the bad guy? You're not the parent who's going, but you didn't get the marks you said you were going to get. It's them going, ooh, not studying for that exam has really bitten me on the bum. Okay. Before we go into the actual subject discussions and your questions, because I'm quite sure these questions, we need to talk about maths and maths lit and the elephant in the room when it comes to maths literacy. We need to debunk the old thinking of if you don't have physical science and maths in your subject offering, it's not, you're wasting everyone's time. Those days are gone. But very quickly, I want to talk about the further studies subjects and how they fit into the picture. Further studies is when you got to be shooting the lights out in a subject and you got to have a passion for it. You got to have a passion for it. If you don't have a passion, don't bother. It's not worth it. A further study subject is what we would have known in the old days as AP or applied. Okay. So yes, when you're doing further studies math in matric, you are doing first year varsity level math. It's the same as when we were at school. If you were doing your AP, you were doing it a year ahead of where you actually were. So it's time consuming because it requires a lot of work. Studying for your exams is not just about the subject. It's about working smart. Is it worth the hours going into something like FS Maths and the amount of hours it takes to prepare for that level of examination? Could I be better applying those hours to other subjects that are going to get me into the university that I want to do? So how do you know when to take an FS subject? A, passion. B, I better be good at it. By the end of grade 9, I should really be getting consistent A's. High B's and A's. If you're not getting high B's and A's, it's going to be challenging, unnecessarily so. FS English, I will always advocate for FS English because I think it's a fabulous subject. Love the subject, but it is reading intensive. You are going to spend a lot of hours reading. You are required to have a significant body of literature behind you to write a good exam. And that exam is grueling. It is grueling. I had my FS class yesterday. They were in a bit of a knock because we were doing a practice essay on times and, you know, time conditions. And I said to them, guys, I have an English degree. I have an advanced English degree. And I still look at those FS questions, go, and the first time I read the question, I'm yowza, what are they asking for here? And I have to take my time to figure it out. So stop freaking out when you read the question and you don't know what to do first off. It's difficult. Deeply rewarding, but difficult. Math is the same. You're doing first year varsity maths. So think about the time and effort that needs to go into that subject. So the big question is why? Why would I do this subject? FS does not fall under the IEB. FS falls under the ISC, the International Secondary Certificate. It's an international qualification. And you really take it if you want to go and study at a university that requires A-levels.
Ivy League.
Ivy League. So remember, we've got on, you guys have all been sent it's on the WhatsApp. You've all sent a document. It's about 5 or 6 pages long of international universities that accept the IEB matric as is. No FS subjects. But if you want to go Ivy League, and that's maybe 8 universities in America, it's your Harvard, MIT, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, it's your Edinburgh University in Scotland, Oxford, Cambridge, St. Andrews, that level. You need your FS subjects.
2.
You need 2 of them. Okay? But if you're not going to operate, if that's never your intention, guys, park your ego. This is not an ego decision. It's not an ego decision. If you're not studying something at that level at one of those universities, get smart, be smart about your time allocations, and don't bother with the FS. Focus your time and energy on the 7 subjects that you will write matric on, that you will offer. They talk about it, you offer matric. That's the terminology they use. The 7 subjects you will offer as a matric candidate, focus your time and energy there.
Can I add something to this?
Yeah.
There are 3 further studies subjects that are offered: English, mathematics, and physical science. And they do work. We had one of our matrics last year who got into St. Andrews, 2 A-level subjects, and got straight in with the IAB. So no other issues going around that. People who are studying engineering or AXI, it's very useful to do AP maths or further studies maths. But what you need to remember is that your AP score, they count nothing towards your AP scores.
Yeah, it does not impact your APS.
But what it does do is, because you're doing maths and English at that level, it does raise the bar of your core maths and your first your home language English when you are actually doing it, because it's almost guaranteed you're going to get an A in those subjects if you're achieving a decent mark in the further studies, which means it raises your AP level scores. And it also means when you go into varsity, it's not a brick between the eyes. You already have an idea of what's going on in that space. You've been taught to think in that space. As Jack said, the IAB is a good matric. It offers a lot of opportunities overseas. Don't discount it. It is a rigorous exam, and it's offering the academic subjects that we do gives you a good key to open doors going into university around South Africa and around the world.
Now, at this point, there are definitely grade 9s every year that are sitting in this discussion going, oh, yeah, it doesn't actually matter, because when I finish my trick, I'm going on a gap year. Can you hear gap year? Can you hear the capital G and the capital Y? I'm going on a gap year. Gap years. Let's be clear, grade 9s, about what a gap year is. Because we've heard it all. I'm not sure what I want to do, so I'm just going to take a year to figure it out. You've just made it 10 times harder to get back into anything academic. Okay? The original gap year, back in the day, what a gap year was, what it was made and intended to be. It was generally run by churches and humanitarian groups. And gap years were when people would matriculate and then go overseas for a year to build houses in Indonesia out of banana palms for poor people. It was missionary work. It was service work. You spent the year going to be in service of communities. That was the original intention of a gap year. A gap year was never lying on the couch playing Xbox while I figure out what I want to do. Okay? So if you guys genuinely want to have a conversation about gap years, we are going to have some tough questions for you, like, where are you spending this gap year? Which quest are you going to?
How are you growing as a human?
How are you growing and giving service as a human on this gap year? Because if your plan is to sit on the couch while I figure myself out, dude, no. No. Your parents and your school have prepared you better than that. So anyone sitting with gap year, let's park that discussion for now.
Please strike that from the record. That did not happen.
So there was service happening, yeah. The general response that as a school we would have to the gap year conversation is, you know, other than if you're not doing Quest, if you're not doing that sort of thing, it doesn't actually matter. I hope what's coming across from the two conversations you heard there is that it doesn't actually matter what your first year looks like. Just do something. It can be the broadest Bachelor of Arts. It can be philosophy, sociology, anthropology. Really?
Stats one.
No, not stats. Don't do stats. But it can be the broadest degree because unlike in my day where you had to choose your majors straight off the bat and then you had to like work on these majors every year and you got to pick up a few electives on the side. In most degrees now, you don't even have to choose your majors until the end of your first year, which is fabulous, I think. You can spend your whole first year actually discovering what you enjoy. You can do a semester of this. You can do a semester of that. You don't have to do a whole year course like we did. And you can spend a year or two figuring out what you actually enjoy and what floats your boat. And once you've decided what blows your hair back, then you can start curating the remainder of your degree. They really have made it that much more accessible now than when we were at school and you did a gap year because you really didn't know. And like me, you got locked into your first degree for 4 years of just this grind. It's not like that anymore. So if your kids are unsure, we're always going to say, just get in. Get that bachelor's matric and just get in. It doesn't matter about the first choice, the second choice, which institution, whatever. That is actually not... It's less important than just get in there and get started. Get going. Because once you're going, you're off. You're going. It's good. You'll be fine.
I've got some other points to add when you're done.
Okay, and then get on to teachers.
Yeah. There's a couple of points I'd like to add. The first thing is we keep talking about the bachelor's pass. We're talking about 40% as a mark. That's not an option at EduInc. Our pass mark is 50%. And the reason why our pass mark is 50% is that if you're getting 50% plus for all your subjects, you will get a bachelor's pass. Will it give you the AP score you need to get into university? Possibly not. But the point is that we, as your educators, your parents, as the people supporting you academically, have done the job. They've given you a bachelor's pass. Your effort will determine if you get into the degree that you want to go into. So don't go, I will get 40% and 30%. Those are not even an option. You won't get to matric with those marks at EduInc. Okay? The second thing I'd like to mention is that EduInc splits up the subjects from an early age, in early grades, into geography and history, life science and physics, economics and business studies. Economics looks like entrepreneurship and things like that for business studies. So that when you get to grade 9, you can start making informed decisions I'm going to go and study physics because that's what I did. No, you did a lot of life science that you enjoyed, and that wasn't the physics element. So that you have actual marks that you can use. If you're not getting 60% for core maths at the end of grade 9, you will not have core maths as an option going into grade 10. You will not. And what is going to happen is you're going to have to change subjects very soon because you're not going to be able to maintain the core maths and you don't have the skills required to be able to do core maths going into grade 11 and 12. Okay. The second thing is that if you're taking physics, Professor Null recommends that you take your English mark.
So Lauren will talk about that.
Will you?
Mm.
The calculation.
We're going to give you some really easy calculations let you know exactly which subjects will work and which won't.
So then the last thing I'd like to add is this is how not to choose your subjects. Because my friends have taken it. Mm. I don't like the teacher or I like the teacher. All right. Teachers come and go. You're stuck with that subject for 3 years. All right. Because my dad did it and my mom did it. And I have daddy and mommy issues that I need to work out of my system and prove to them that I'm worthy.
Hell yeah.
The reasons you do take it is because you're curious about it and that you are interested in the subjects. Okay. Parents, this is your child's academic journey. Please do not let the ghosts of your academic journey dictate what's going on. You can share your journey, but ultimately they are walking into a very different world from what we've walked. Okay? Look at what they're doing on merit and who they are and what their personalities are and what they are capable of doing. Our jobs as the parents and the educators is to get them through that door because that's the step for them to take control of their lives. Okay? That's what I have to say about this, and I think it's time to hand it over. And I see you have the microphone, Mr. Cook.
I'm actually going to ask.
Okay.
We're going to start with the maths discussion because that's often the most debated one. It's the whole thing of is my child's matric worth it if they don't do core math? Can they get into varsity if they don't do core math? So, Ms. Snow, over to you. Yes.
Before you do,
on the red dot.
We're excusing our guest.
Ah.
She has to leave. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please thank you, Dr. Van Us. You've got to have a child to go and look after now.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Right, Ms. Snow, please enlighten us.
Good evening, everyone. For anyone who doesn't know me, I am Ms. Snow. I teach the senior math as well as the further studies math. And I have a fond relationship with statistics. It's my favorite part of math. So there are two sides to that sword.
Oh, yeah.
In general, we've gotten calculations from Prof. Nell, and he recommends that in order to take mathematics, we want to take our English mark plus our math mark at the end of grade 9. And if you are not getting 120 at minimum, then you should choose Mathlet.
If you're getting teacher's shaking his head, you better say that again.
120.
So 60 for English, 60 for math.
So in general, a 60 math, 60 English, Addie.
Okay.
If you're meeting that requirement, then we can look at doing math and then a whole other discussion for further studies math.
What would you like to see for further studies math?
We're getting at least a 75 in math with a big, big, big passion in actually wanting to delve deep into the subject and
no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wanting to spend your Friday evenings doing stats.
Can you just talk about when those exams can be written? Because there's an instance now, for example, where there's...
Yeah. For example, we've got 3 students in grade 11 doing further study subjects, 2 in further studies English and 1 in further studies math. They've worked very hard and diligently over the last 2 years, and they are now ready to write their further studies exams in May of next year, which means that they will then complete their ISC requirement in May, and they can go on to then focus on the NSC offering towards November. So they've worked.
And they get the added bonus that if they are not happy with the mark they get in May, they can actually rewrite the exam in November and get a second kick at the ball. But obviously that's not what we're aiming for. Yeah. We'd like them to get that heavy stuff out the way nice and early in the year.
Yeah, the student that did, or the students that did further studies last year, they did it in November, but we did find that it was quite...
It's a lot.
Yeah, it was quite difficult.
Overwhelming,
yeah. Yeah. But remember that math is not just a personal torture device. It also allows you to gain skills in critical thinking and problem solving. So depending on whether you're going into a commerce degree or a sciences, you might want to make sure that you've got those skills up as well.
And it's the only subject that counts.
Oh. Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
So do you want to talk about Mathlet?
I think Sianna must also add.
Well, no, it's just in terms of, so like I was saying, there are a lot of parents who say, well, if you don't, you have to do core math. There's no option. If you don't do core math, your matric's not worth the piece of paper it's written on. When you go to the EdSycs now that do all the psychometric testing for subject choices and then career assessment down the track, ProfNel's one of the, I mean, you guys have been to ProfNel and you guys got ProfNel Senior. ProfNel Junior is taking over that practice. We just couldn't get him here tonight. But ProfNel actually sits on the board at WITS and he oversees all of this stuff. So he's very much got his finger on the pulse of all of this. And he's advocating to change the name of math literacy to business maths. Because math literacy has gotten quite a raw deal. Back when it was first introduced, yes, it was your math light. You know, your free option, your non-paid math. It wasn't, you couldn't get into varsity with Mathlet. It wasn't, you couldn't count it towards an APS. It really was pretty feeble. And actually, just as an interesting point, I don't know if the teachers even know this. When we opened Edging, we didn't offer Mathlet. You could only take Math Core. But down the years, Mathlet has become business maths. It really is business maths. It is the math you would take if you're going to run a business one day. And it is far more, in fact, now I'm at the point where if I could make Mathlet a compulsory subject, even if you did core math, I would, because you're doing depreciations, interest rates, all of the things that you actually use, you do tax, you do all of these things that you actually need to be a functional adult. So it is a very valuable subject that is now recognized by the universities that does contribute towards your APS. You can't go into medicine on Mathlet, but you can go into a whole lot more commerce degrees than ever before. You can go into some of the Bachelor of Sciences and move across to medicine if you've been on the Mathlet stream. There are far more options available to you now. Mathlet is no longer the throwaway stepchild of math. It is a good subject in its own right. So if your thinking has been the traditional thinking of it's not worth the go, times have changed on that subject. Fair?
Very fair.
Maybe Miss Mbulu would like
to. Is that fair, Miss Mbulu?
Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, it is practical math.
Take the mic.
Really, math now is, if you're going to be an engineer or a doctor or something specifically mathematical, take core math. Otherwise, don't bother.
Anything?
You have to stand here. Okay, no, it's fine.
As I'm very passionate about Mathlet, actually. It's one of my favorites because for basically most of your subjects from grade 10 to 12, actually, math literacy is what you need. For bio, you do graph work, simple calculations that you do regularly on when you do Mathlet. So I really, really like it. And it's practical. We actually do things hands-on. Mm. We go and count things outside. We go measure the field or the multi-court. We do that. we bake. They baked at some point. They had to follow instructions and all of that. So it is really a subject that I feel very passionate about. And as you grow into the subject, you find out that things become simpler. Things become more enjoyable. Things like income tax don't become scary anymore. In fact, at some point I was like, guys, everyone choose a career. Everyone chose a career. And I said, please calculate, imagine a salary. And then now calculate each other's taxes. Mm. And everyone had a ball calculating each other's taxes. So it's just one of those subjects that my kids leave very happy from my subject or from my lesson, because they really, really enjoyed the subject.
So now you can introduce economics while you have the microphone.
All right. Right. So a bit of math literacy is also included in eco. We do a lot of percentage increases as well in eco. So that skill is transferable to economics as well. Economics is so broad. It's actually called, when we start off this or introduce the subject in grade 10, we call it the human social sciences subject, because it introduces the human aspect as well as the sciences aspect of the subject. So, and now there's even more, it's broader now, because you have development, you have sustainability that has entered this, the new space, which economics kind of caters for now. So eco kind of brings together critical thinking and analytical skills, as well as real life application of what you do.
Thank you, Ms. Mbulu. Can you please give the microphone to Mr. Hall? I would like to move on to physics, because this is the other one. In my day, when I was a young thing back a long time ago. You just got fired. you know, your degree wasn't worth anything, or your subject choice wasn't worth anything if you didn't have science. So I slogged my way through high school science, hating every second of it, terrible at it, still not to this day understanding most of it. No longer the case. Why would you take physics nowadays?
So to join in Ms. Snow's jab to Mrs. A, I loved science back in school.
Maybe it was the teacher. Maybe I had a bad teacher.
So physical sciences is the other side of the coin to the math literacy argument, which is where math core is essential. The way that you think, that you're going to approach the subjects is, or mathematics specifically, is going to directly lead to how you approach physical sciences. The algebra that you learn in grade 10, grade 11, and grade 12 math is going to be directly relevant to help you with the physics, especially, and balancing out the stoichiometric calculations in chemistry that you'll be doing as well. There's
careers
in terms of careers. So I know that WITS has been considering adding physical sciences to its medicine requirements, just because of the critical thinking skills that comes with the added physical sciences, and the chemistry as well, and leading that into medicine. Anything related to engineering, anything that involves the manipulation of systems, physical systems, is going to need knowledge of physics and the forces and the kinematics behind it. It's very much the physical world that you're going to be dealing with. Even if you're going to something like mechanics, where you're dealing with physical systems, even if you don't take physics, if somebody took physical sciences, the ability to interact with the concepts that they will deal with, the way that the motors are moving and functioning at a fundamental level, and the chemistry behind the combustion, those will all benefit from having a background knowledge of physical sciences, especially with the practicals that we do and the way that you engage with these physical systems. So that background skill, even if it's not the direct knowledge of doing a degree in physics or in chemistry, those that background knowledge is going to be useful to engage with them.
Prof. Nell's calculation?
In terms of the consideration from our side for you to take physical sciences, there is the math requirement of getting a combined mark of 120 for English and math, And then above that, you need to add your physical sciences mark to get a total of 180 to be considered to take physical sciences. Now, because we've semesterized physical sciences, natural sciences into physical sciences and life sciences, and for you guys specifically, you did the physical sciences aspect in the first semester. So from term one and leading up to the July exams in term two, that mark in your term two is going to be what you would add to your calculation to see, do you get 180? So it'll be your English and math mark at the end of this year. And then your term two mark, where you wrote the July exam, and that'll be taken into consideration for whether you can take physical sciences. Anything above that is fantastic, but that 60% average is what we're looking for to know, can you cope with a good English mark to understand the comprehension and engagement with the wordy, lengthy questions, the mathematics for how you think about things in a systematic way, and then the content itself, do you have an interest in engaging with the physics and the chemistry behind the minutia of how the physical world works at a macro and a micro scale?
So to be clear, you have to have core maths to take physics. Mm. That is an IAB requirement. And to prove the point, physics and maths literacy are written on the same day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Refined.
So one of the, we're not going to go teacher by teacher. We're going to be question directed now. If a parent or a child has a specific subject question, we'll do it like that.
Because you've now spoken about the most important subjects.
Well, the ones with the most confusion.
Oh, okay.
Some parents ask, can my child take math core and math literacy? That question comes up because they hedge their bets. Okay, well, I want to go into math core, but I know it's really difficult. So can we also do math core? Can we start with math core as an eighth math lit as an eighth subject and go as far as we can and drop the math core but maintain the math lit down the track if necessary? Or possibly even write both exams at the end of matric. In the IAB space, technically the answer to that question is yes. In the government school space, you can't. They write core math and math lit on the same day. So they don't allow you to do both math subjects. The technical answer is yes, you could write both subjects or contain or do both subjects if you wanted to. The practical answer is, why would you do that? What generally tends to, and we've done it before, what generally tends to happen in that space is the core math suffers because there's the perceived backdoor. Ah, it's fine. I've got math lit as my backup. Don't actually have to put 100% into the core math. It's going to fall away at some point. It's just not a good psychology. So it doesn't tend to work out in the long run. It's not something we would advise.
Don't start maths with, let's see how it goes.
With the back door.
Should be, I'm going to do this or I'm just going to take maths literacy. Because if it's, oh, let me see how far I go, you are ultimately going to end up taking maths literacy because your mind is already made up in that regard.
So grade nines, if you have any questions at this point, please come on, just put your camera up on the main, on the meet. Parents, what about you? Well, Sinjin, Aditya, Chloe.
Go. Microphone.
Use the microphone, Chloe.
What marks do we need to be getting to do AP English?
It's the same as what Ms. Snow said. If you need to be sitting with a good 75, you need to be on your edging pass or above for your AP English, and you need to be prepared to commit significant reading time. The literature burden is heavy on FS English. There's a selection of prescribed novels, prescribed plays, and prescribed films that you do as one of your three questions. The second of your three questions is a list of poets. You have to have, it's called an immersion. You choose a theme. You get options of themes and you choose your immersion. Then you have to have six poems for that question. And then you still have your own reading question, which is a minimum of four novels. So it is a significant reading burden. If you enjoy reading and you enjoy really digging into the stuff, really getting your teeth into it, you'll enjoy FS English. But if your reading is supplemental, you just read your current Setwork books because you have to get through them, it's not for you.
Also, what's the difference between business studies and economics?
Who? Miss Twalala.
Yeah.
Twalala.
Oh, you want to give this one to Miss Mbulu? No, Miss Twalala, we haven't heard from you.
Do I need to stand?
Yeah, it's just for the...
Do I need to stand?
Yes.
You look so pretty.
Imagine that. Okay, so the difference between business studies and economics is that eco focuses on what is happening globally, whereas business studies is about what is happening internally in your company. So it does intertwine because we have the three business environments, which is your micro, market and macro, which focuses on what is happening globally, right? But when it comes to critical analysis and everything, it is pretty much the same. It's just that with economics, it's more current affairs and how it affects the economy as a whole. So business teaches you how to run a business, how to work with people, and all the things that you need for your business, whereas eco is more about what is happening outside of South Africa, outside of your company, and how would it affect the economy. Not the business, the economy. Add the business, business studies. The business. Yes, so that would be business studies.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Ma'am, to take business, do you have to like take pure math or math lit, or you can take like either?
You can take either. Okay.
I would like to add something to that. So a good subject combination is often economics, business studies, mass literacy, and history. And you might say, Ms. Mbulu is like, what? History? But history speaks about the history of the world and a lot of the current economic systems that are in place and the political effects that are happening on the economy has come through history. It's also a nice way that integrates the ability to write about that, which translates into business studies and economics as well. It gives you a good perspective in terms of a timeline. So it's not just the macro and the micro that we've spoken about, but also the timeline of economy too. If you understand the current economy, Bretton Woods, for example, the gold standard, that's almost history. And it's affected by American history and the Second World War, et cetera, which is a good tie into what's going on.
So one of the questions that we haven't heard yet, which we normally hear, is why do we not offer accounting? Why does EdgeInc not offer accounting? And the answer is that when the IAB updates that curriculum, we'll consider it. But the last time we offered accounting, they were still teaching kids how to write checks.
It has
become so outdated. They are literally still, their syllabus still covers journal, you're doing physical journals. They are not teaching kids how to use Pastel, QuickBooks, any of the actual accounting software that's being used. It's just, until that becomes more updated, we can't see the value in the subject.
One of the learners here at EdgeInc doesn't do math. How does that affect your university applications and stuff? And like, what would you do basically in that situation?
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
So, you're talking about special accommodations through the IAB. So, in the past, you've got some students that have been exempt from Afrikaans as a first additional language because of learning barriers. Not because they don't like Afrikaans or they find it difficult. So they've got legitimate reasons for that. In the same way, there's a learner who's been exempt from mathematics. It means that that learner has to take another subject as the same as the students that are exempt from the first additional language. It does affect your AP scores and it does affect your applications to university because it is compulsory to have those subjects for a lot of the universities. So it's not something that happens at a whim. It's not because I don't like the subject or it's too difficult. There are proper psychological educational psych ed processes that have to go through to be able to accommodate that. And the IAB offers them, well, exempts you from them under very, very specific circumstances, and they will pick up another subject. So they will have 4 elective subjects instead of 3 elective subjects. Okay.
We have a question online. Can't see who from.
Is it all? Caden, why is the question, Caden?
The question that I had was mostly answered by what was talked about right now. But my question was, would business studies and economics pair well?
Yes, very much so.
Yes, in fact, it's becoming more and more common year on year. Economics is a relatively new IB subject, you know, if we look at the bigger scale or the bigger picture, but it's becoming popular very quickly because it has such a big application to so many different things. It pairs well.
Go together.
Yes, you can take them together if you'd like to, especially if you're thinking on the entrepreneurial side, running your own business, all of that sort of thing. It's quite a nice combination. Excellent. Yeah.
Well, can I add on to my question? If you were to take both of them, would it be very, very content heavy and take up a lot of time?
You're going into grade 10, 11, and 12. The answer is yes to all the subjects. Caden, it's yes to all the subjects. If you're not practicing hard.
But more than the usual amount to the lot, like more than.
Caden, there's nothing to negotiate here. The answer is yes.
Yes.
And you guys are not drawn. So you
choose. Yeah. So, Caden, it's all content. Pick your poison. If it's history, it's content heavy. If it's geography, it's content heavy. If it's life science, it's very content heavy. If it's physics, it's content heavy in practice. If it's maths, it's content heavy in practice. There is no easy option. That's why we offer the academic subjects. Okay. Sorry.
This is why we get later on, we'll get into the conversation about the first and second NQF levels that this actually qualifies you for.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah.
You're being qualified. You're now out of education.
Yeah.
Question?
Mr. Bacada.
Yes, Mr. Bacada.
He wants an opportunity to punt history.
thank you so much. Thank you so much. Good evening. I am Mr. Bacada. Now, quickly, two quite significant skills, especially if you're thinking of taking history as a grade, like learner, our next year in 2026. Synthesis of information, number one. And secondly, academic writing. Mm-hmm. Synthesis of information and academic writing. What is synthesis of information? I am going to teach you how to use the information that we are learning in class to make sense of yourself and the world around you. That's synthesis of information. So if you want to understand yourself, understand the world around you. Make sense of everything that is taking place around you. Who does what? Why are they doing it that way? Why now? Right? Take history. Academic writing. I'm also going to teach you how to communicate your thoughts, how to communicate that which you've made sense about yourself and your world around you through academic writing, through discursive essay writing skills. Those two skills are quite significant. In both in terms of writing discursive essays in history and source analysis skills. So, yes, Mr. A is quite right. It's content heavy and we do a lot of writing, right? Writing discursive essay. And also it kind of trains the student to be both a critical and an independent thinker, making sense of the world around you critically.
Okay, yeah.
Right. I think I've done justice.
Yeah, well done. So
anyone thinking about law, LLBs or anything in that line, history? Yes.
100%. So the source-based thinking, the source-based essay writing that you learn in history is essential in life orientation. It's essential in life science because that happens, and in business. There's a lot of that. Discursive essays in English too and other essay writing. Those skills are all cross-pollinated throughout the different subjects. And in fact, your predecessor would sit in the ALO lessons so that we were speaking on the same page on how to do discursive essays correctly and where the nuances came in and how you state your stance and things like that.
That's the most important subject, natural science. Where's that?
So natural science is in?
Yes.
So biology, life sciences. Okay.
So it seems that the life science, oh, there she's sitting. In my home, yes. Right. So they would like to hear about your subject. Seeing as the microbiology has taken Mr. Singh out.
Yes.
So he can't comment on it today. Called bacteria and viruses.
Okay. So, life sciences, where do I start? Very content heavy, like you said.
Yeah.
I saw when you said the other subject, you said content heavy. Then when you came to life sciences, you said very content heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. So you need to be very good with your reading. So your English mark needs to be good because there's a lot of reading and it's not just reading for fun, reading for understanding. And then you also need to synthesize information. Like you were saying, you need to be able to, if you ask for a definition, not just, regurgitate what we've given you, but bring information together from what you've learned to formulate the definition, because definitions carry a lot of marks with us. And then you need to be very good with your critical thinking as well, because it's not just regurgitating the information from the textbook. Once again, you need to be able to link, because it's systems thinking. It's thinking about the tiny microscopic things all the way zooming out into the bigger thing, the population, the ecology, all of that, and back into the cells again and looking at the tiny organelles in the cell. So it is a very interesting subject. Love it. And I know most of the students always complain about the content. Oh my gosh, there's more. There's more. There's always more. Okay. But if you love it and you have a passion for it, it's a good subject for you because you learn a lot about the body, about how the world works as well in terms of nature and in terms of making babies, and which is a popular topic with us. And that's
teenagers.
I know, especially with the grade nines, they will tell you a lot about that one. You learn a lot. And to summarize all of it, lots of content. We also do a lot of practical work. We start doing our summative practicals. We actually start very early in grade 4, actually. But as you go into your FET, they get more serious. And we always do one every term. And we also do dissections. And we go out into nature and do surveys and ecological studies. And we write essays, not a discursive essay. We're going to call it a scientific essay. Because once we say discursive, people come with peel and we have no idea what that is. We don't want to know. We do not want to know what peel is. We please know. Okay. It's a scientific essay, a source-based scientific essay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Okay. That's what we call it. Yeah. But
and
otherwise.
You get to do fun stuff like go to the biolab.
Exactly. We go on cool excursions. We learn about stem cells and reproductive technologies. And, yeah, stuff like that. And what was the other thing?
That's good.
For like carriers, no?
Lots of carriers.
Yeah. There's lots of carriers. For example, I studied environmental science. Mr. Singh studied the same thing as well. But there's microbiology. There's genetic engineering. There is, immunizations and what's that one? Virology, finding out how viruses spread across the world, epidemiology.
But we're all experts after COVID, isn't it?
True. Medicine, medical technology, paramedics also need to know life sciences, lab technicians. There's a lot that you can do with it. So ask yourself, are you someone who gets excited being in the lab and working with lab equipment, or do you like talking to people more? Then you can go into genetic counseling as well. So you're not stuck with just the science field. You can mix it with psychology and go into genetic counseling. Or do you like working with children? You can go into pediatrics and all of that. So it's quite varied. So
to share,
love it.
Thank you. To share on what you're saying about the psychology, one of Mrs. A's regrets is that she has, you know, she's finishing a master's degree in psychology and having to catch up on the biology, life science side of things that she never did at school. Didn't stop her from doing it, but it would have given you a bit more of a leg up having studied that.
Yeah, so I didn't
do
biology in high school. I did physics. Big mistake, because then when I started studying psychology, the whole of Psych 1 was the biology of the brain.
Yeah.
So I needed to essentially do matric biology while doing my first year. Luckily, I found it particularly fascinating, so it wasn't, you know, too much of a hardship. Mm. But I think there's a lot more applicability to life science than to, you know, physics for me, it was like math, like core math. You need to have a specific direction you're moving in, whereas life science is more generalized. There are more options available to you.
So I think what I do feel is that the redheaded stepchild, not Nicolene, but her subject, what the grade nines affectionately call the rock lickers. I think I would just to finish off, I'd like to just give you guys, you two, a quick forum for life orientation and the geography.
Sure. Do you want to go? I'm clipped up. I still need.
Oh, you're locked up already. Okay. You're right. Sorry. You don't have to stand up. You can just talk.
Yeah. So we're also called AP Gardening. No. Fun fact. I actually think they do more gardening in biology than we do. We do not learn about plants, guys, at all. Okay. So, yeah, with geography, it touches on quite a few things. You'll start in grade 10 and you'll do the atmosphere, firstly. And then we go into something called geomorphology. So then you learn how do rocks form, how does soil form, how does food grow in the soil that is now formed from the rocks? Okay.
AP gardening, yeah.
That's a very small part of it, though. and then zooming out from that, things like sustainability and development that was also mentioned in economics and in business studies, it comes up in geography as well. Now, a lot of the time the kids go, oh, I already learned this in economics. But geography still touches on it because there's different aspects. There's human geography, there's economic geography, and then there's developmental geography, there's population geography. There's a lot of different types of geography, basically. But yeah, and also it's a very niche field. People think that, oh, what am I going to do with this? Oh, I've just learned how it rains. Who cares? Okay, let's move on, you know. There's a lot of different careers you can actually go into with it. You can do things like your weather sciences, where you become a meteorologist. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Right. They make use of geography. And actually, fun fact, you can do a lot of Bachelor of Science degrees using geography. So, yeah. And there's, again, as I said, niche careers that you would never think of. So stuff like land evaluation, right, and urban planning. Those are all things that people that have studied, geography, they do that. One of the matrics, actually, he applied for. Urban planning and development, Jeremy. So yeah,
oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. But it's one of his top options. So there's a lot of different fields that you can actually get into if you do geography. I mean, even now, Miss Mohove, she said she studied environmental sciences. Yeah, that's also something that geography forms part of. And underneath environmental sciences, you find a lot of different fields underneath that. So yeah. So actually, it's quite interesting. Also, we also go outside a lot. We do a lot of excursions. Yeah. We recently went on a tour of like the Joburg CBD and like the surrounding areas. And they give you a lot of interesting information. You learn a bit about how the city developed and grew. Yeah. And then, yeah, we learn about like the watersheds and, how the rainwater is divided up into the different rivers and dams. Okay. Anyway, yeah, you get the idea. And yeah.
This is why we left it for last. It's a niche subject.
Yeah, there's this, yeah. But it's actually, there's a lot of value in it. New, you like, yeah, you learn a lot of interesting things. Yeah.
Let's talk about the value of LO quickly, sir.
Given that all of your kids have to take my subject, I'll keep it short and sweet. I spend basically every living hour in the classroom up until grade 9 teaching your children how to navigate society, how to be decent human beings. And believe me, it's harder to get them to do that than you would expect. But
their parents, they know this.
But I'd like to think that we've made some good progress. At the FET level, a lot of the soft science stuff does move a little to the wayside, and we focus on the skills related to getting their marks across the subjects, specifically your ability to read a source and analyze it critically, your ability to break down and understand questions. For example, understanding the difference between explain, define, and describe in a question, and what the difference between a 1, 2, or 8 mark question looks like. They also do a lot of discursive essays, where they start need to learn how to be able to weigh two sides of an argument and come to a conclusion, to know what that structure looks like, to be able to do it for a minimum of 500 words in the span of 1 hour, because the other half of the exam is the ability to, yeah, the source-based questions. Yeah, I guess that's about it for Allo at the FET level. Here at EduInc, what I'm very grateful for is that we've got a lot of space within the IB curriculum and the culture of the school where we can shift the curriculum based on the needs of the kids. While sex ed is typically the highlight of term three for the grade nines, their mental health came up and we had to take a quick pivot and talk about that. Then there was the assassination of a political figure and suddenly the whole school's on fire talking about it. And we get to take a moment and ask, ethically speaking, what does that conversation look like? So that flexibility to say, what do you guys need to know at this stage of your life? And being able to tackle those questions is something that I get to enjoy doing with your kids. And they come to me with some very wild and wonderful questions. So yeah, that'll be it. Thanks.
So fun fact, there is no life orientation final IEB exam. They write the CAT, which is basically an SBA, the last SBA that they write, which is a standardized assessment in the prelims. So our metrics that are writing now have finished. They finished the LO in the beginning of September.
Just on that, I'd like to point out that at EduInc, we consistently rank higher than the national average on our CAT Pod Bs. Thank you very much.
Okay. Some validation for, and the national average is 76 or something like that. Yeah.
Well, we do have a kind of an inside joke that if you can't get a distinction for life orientation, we need to drop you in local prison.
Right, guys.
Okay, so to wrap up this evening, we haven't touched on the languages. Those are compulsory, as we discussed. And we don't need to talk about my subject because without my subject, you couldn't do any of these. So it's just that important.
No.
So
I can offslate and officom.
No, I'm going to. I'd like to say thank you for being here. This is a very, it's an info dump evening. It's a difficult one to, for you guys to absorb because there's so much information that comes at you in such a short period of time. It's very unrealistic to think that you've absorbed everything and that you know all the answers and that you've now got this. So we fully expect you to come and talk to the teachers about questions you might have. My child is still dithering between this subject and this subject. Your teachers work with your kids for 67 hours every day. Come and ask them. They have very good insights into the way your kids operate. They can guide you. They can give you advice about the best subjects or the most suitable subjects for your kids. Please just come in and ask. Have the conversation. But also, at the same time, please don't get too uptight about it. If we get to the end of term one in grade 10 and it's clearly a mistake, we can change it. Okay. We can do that. So thank you for your time tonight. Thank you for absorbing all of this information that just got thrown at you. And we will see you, if not before, we'll see you for the information evening at the beginning of grade 10, where there is quite a significant pivot between what your schooling journey has been to the end of grade 9 and what it now becomes for the FET. We'll see you then. Thank you very much.